Hello and welcome to Building the Game, a documentary podcast. My name is Rob, and with me as always is Jason.
What's up, Rob?
How did I do that time? Did I do better?
It wasn't quite as good as when I did it, but no, I mean that was pretty solid.
I'm working on my announcer voice.
I like it.
I'm working very hard on my announcer voice.
I was
a little overdone there.
Other podcasters, you know, are going to be jealous of your voice.
Probably not.
Nope.
Probably not. But maybe I can do some really excellent commercials for them.
Unless other podcasters include me, because I'm super jealous of your announcer.
Well, you should be. Everyone should be, but I don't think anybody really is.
Just me.
Just you. Shut up.
So, hey, Thanksgiving just got over.
Yeah, it did, didn't it? Yeah, by the time this posts, it will be long gone, but...
No, not really. I mean...
Oh, you're right.
This is posting this week, so...
You're right, yeah.
We're actually talking about something.
We're behind
just
schedule.
After it happened.
We're behind schedule on our recording, which means we're on time.
Right, yes. So, this is not pre-recorded, people.
No, yes.
I mean, it is, because that... Of course it is, right? Because it's not live,
well,
but...
it's not super pre-recorded.
Right, right. Yeah. So... got back from Thanksgiving, had a good time, mm-hmm. Lots of family. I mean, it wears you down, like seeing all so many people and stuff. But
yeah,
this year was good for us because everybody got together.
Mm-hmm.
We have like four separate families. And that sounds like a bad idea to bring them all together, but it actually worked really well and meant we had to drive less places. So
that's good.
It was a little more calming.
Cool.
So what about you?
Yeah, we hosted here. My wife's family. And
I don't envy that.
No. My wife's family, my dad came over and... It was the best thing I can say about Thanksgiving for us this year is that it was over in about 3 hours, which was a big surprise to us. Everybody showed up on time and it was great. We all ate and then everybody left.
Wow.
I mean, I expected that they'd be at our house, for 10 hours and we'd have to kick them out.
Right.
But everybody's just ready to go. I mean, a couple of her sisters have, boyfriends and they kind of go do stuff with the boyfriend's family.
Right.
And, you know, so everybody's just done. So that was great.
Wow.
It was fantastic. So so after that, we were like, hey, we got a house full of food and people brought free booze. So we finished off some wine that people left there and played a couple of games of Dominion. It was great.
Nice.
Yeah.
Good times.
Yeah. What you been playing?
What have I been playing? Recently, I pulled a game out that I haven't played in quite a while. It's one of those games that my wife and I picked up, back when I was buying a lot more just store-bought games because, you know, a lot of people... Right, you know, a lot of people who we're friends with and gamers, right? We buy games at Gen Con, right?
Yeah,
I mean,
right.
We buy those type of games. But I'm still a fan of going to, like, Target and picking out a game that looks different and buying it.
Yeah, I never do that. When I'm at Target, it never even occurs to me the board game section. I don't know why.
Really?
Yeah, it never occurs to me.
It's cool, Knox. If you look, they have, like, Settlers there.
Yeah, okay.
Which is, I mean, it makes me so excited.
You know, it's a weird thing. I was at a Barnes & Noble recently, and for some reason, when I go to Barnes & Noble, I always think about board games when I'm in there, because they usually have pretty good selection.
They have an awesome section.
But when I'm at Target or Walmart or another big box store, never even occurs to me to go to the toy section and look at games.
Yeah, I mean...
I have no idea why.
Well, because 5 years ago, that wasn't a thing, right?
I guess you're right, yeah.
I mean, 5 years ago, you were buying just mass market games there.
Yeah.
But now, because of thanks to places like Barnes & Noble, really, really getting into... First, they got Settlers. And that's like the gateway drug, I mean, right? So they get Settlers, and then they start getting other stuff, you know? And I would say now, Barnes & Noble, when I go in there, and I feel bad saying this, but their game section is almost as good as our friendly local game store.
I would say it might be better because it has more variety.
That's actually true.
Yeah, because our local game store, I mean, they have a lot of obscure stuff, but they also have just a ton of D&D and a ton of Cthulhu stuff.
Right.
And Barnes & Noble, our local one anyway, it seems to kind of, I don't know, just have more variety.
Right. So, no, yeah. I mean, our local Barnes & Noble, too, I'm also super impressed.
Yeah.
So, anyways, long story short.
Yeah, right.
I got this game, I think, at Target a few years ago. It's called Three for a Crime.
Three for a Crime? No, it says Three of a Crime.
Three of a Crime. Yep. That's right. I read it wrong. I'm reading the label upside down.
Yeah, you are.
I really thought this game, ever since I've been playing it, was called Three for a Crime. That's hilarious. So, the way the game works is you are a detective. And you're trying to figure out who committed a crime.
Okay.
So you get these cards, like so. And on these cards, you can see, Rob, but I'll explain to the listeners. There are different criminals. They all have neat names like Johnny Cortex and Louis St. Louis and Kid Cassidy.
Yeah.
And there's several different people. And there's three on each card.
Okay.
And they all look like they are... in a police lineup. And they're all very stylized and funny.
Mm-hmm.
So what happens in the game is I would draw one of those cards, and if there was multiple players, not just two, I would draw a card, I'd look at it, and I'd put it down, and then people, and no one, I wouldn't show anyone. And then you, as the other player, you'd flip over on one of the cards off the deck, you'd lay it down. And then I would take a 0, 1, 2, or 3, and lay that in front of the card. And what that represents is how many of the people on your card are also on my card, right?
Okay.
And basically, you keep doing that with all the players, skipping the person who's the perpetrator that turn.
Okay.
And the detectives, all the other players, meaning, they keep going through until somebody's ready to make an accusation. They think they know who's on the card, and they'll make an accusation. And if they're right, they win it. And that means they win the card, and that's like a point for them, basically, right?
Okay.
If they don't, if they get it wrong, then they're out until the next round.
Okay.
So it's kind of fun. It's a guessing game, right? I mean, it's like a deduction game.
Sure.
It's like a simplified version of Clue, I guess would be the easy way to put it.
Okay.
It's kind of like Clue meets Guess Who.
Yeah,
you know
yeah.
that flip game?
Right,
Does he have a mustache? he's right. wearing a green coat. So it's kind of like that.
Yeah.
The most fun version of this game is the duel, which is just a two-player game, and you can play one way, or like the normal standard way, or you can play the duel, which is the best. Basically, what that means is you have a card and I have a card, and we both look at our card, and then we take turns playing cards out, back and forth, trying to determine, and the person trying to determine what the other person has, and whoever guesses first wins the game. And then you play multiple games, you know, like wife and I usually play best out of three. So, but it's a fun game. I mean, it's not like a huge Euro or something. Right?
Sure, sure.
But I mean, it's just a fun little game, as I like to say about games with cards and just a few pieces. But it's a good time.
Fair enough.
And it's a nice time killer. It plays pretty fast.
Yeah.
So, and it's made by Game Right. So,
okay.
Yeah, it's a fun game.
Right on.
How about you, sir?
Well, like I said, we played some Dominion, over the holiday break. We also played a little bit of Quadify.
You might
remember that block stacking game, right? And, played some more Bananagrams when we were pretty drunk.
I saw you tweeting about that, I believe.
Oh, was I? I don't even remember. Yeah, but really what most of my weekend has been spent playing is Hitman Absolution, which I know it's not a board game, but we talk about video games on here sometimes, so it's okay. I'm playing on my PS3, and I've never played a Hitman game before. Do you know what the Hitman games are?
Yeah, there's a bald guy.
Yeah.
Agent 47.
Yep.
He's a hitman.
Hey! Yeah, and the point of the game is you're this hitman, and you have to go in, and you have to kill your target, and then get out. And it's like a stealth... I mean, it's looks like and sounds like an action game, but it's really like a stealth puzzle game.
Now, I'm just curious, are you the good guy or the bad guy?
Well, that depends on your perspective on the story.
I'm just curious, because he's a hitman, right? But
yeah.
I've seen hitman movies where they're the protagonist.
Yeah.
Now, we did talk about there is a hitman movie.
There's a hitman movie. Neither of us have seen it yet.
No.
But we want to.
My mom says it's delightful. She has a huge crush on Timothy Olyphant.
Yeah, right. I can't speak for the other games, like I said, because I'm playing it, so I don't know what the story is there. I think they kind of set Agent 47 up as kind of, you know, the anti-hero kind of guy, right? So in this one, he's betrayed by the agency, and he's trying to take out all the bad guys that work for the agency to try and teach them a lesson and get his revenge for them wronging him. So he's, again, kind of an anti-hero thing. And the game, I mean, you get points for taking out your target, but you lose points for taking out anybody else. So, you know, every level, every stage that you're in, there's civilians out there. And then there's also like henchmen and you know, bad guys, other random bad guys. And you can kill any one of them if you want, but you lose points for that.
Oh, okay. Well, so, that's not bad. I mean, that makes him more of a good guy than if you got points for Grand Theft Auto in it.
Right. And so, yeah. And the game is it's not saying you can't kill people wantonly and horribly, but it's saying you're going to lose points if you do. It's discouraging you from
there
doing
are
that.
Penalties,
yeah,
sir,
right?
If you want to kill lots of people.
Right. You know, I mean, anyway, but I never played it before, and I watched a few videos of this one online, and it just looks beautiful. It's gorgeous. I'm playing on PS3. I'm told the PC version is just unbelievably beautiful to look at. It's a stealth puzzle game where the protagonist or your character is a guy who's walking around with the guns killing people. It's a very strange thing, but it's kind of just fun to get into those worlds. And a big part of the game is just kind of walking around and seeing what's going on, or even just simply standing somewhere for anywhere from 2 to 10 minutes at a time, just to see what all the other NPCs in the game are doing, so you can kind of get an idea of the flow of what's going on, because there's no time limit on these things.
Right.
Yeah.
So I assume, is it you die, you come back, you start the level over?
Yeah, there's a checkpointing system, but yeah, basically.
Oh, okay,
yeah.
Good.
So. Yeah, there's not a lot of checkpointing, so.
But the idea is that, right, you can keep trying. I mean, you're mm-hmm. You're probably going to fail sometimes trying to figure out the puzzle
of
how to get through and stuff.
Right. And, I mean, you can go in with guns blazing and just murder everybody and finish the game, but you're going to get a low score for doing that, and that's kind of anti to the point, to the goal of the game.
You're trying to play a different game.
Exactly. If you're going to do that, you might as well play Halo or Gears of War or something.
You know?
So, yeah. So, it's not really about that. And I really dig it a lot. I'm having tons of fun with it. And I think I'm only like about 10 hours into it right now. And I think I'm almost done with the story. But all the levels are just infinitely replayable because there's so many different ways to take people out. There's no one specific right way to do it.
Okay.
There's all kinds of different options. And there's a bunch of like collectibles and different weapons and different items you can pick up in the level and different. If you kill somebody, you can put on their clothes as a disguise, you know. And so you get the more points, the more of that stuff you pick up while you're in the level, the more points you're going to get for that, or more bonus points you're going to get at the end of that stuff for racking up those different items.
Okay.
It's fun.
Cool.
Yeah.
Cool. All right.
Yeah. Hitman Absolution, highly recommended. Shall we move on?
We shall.
Okay, I think it's time for the Mechanic of the Week.
Hey, my turn for the Mechanic of the Week.
It is your turn today.
If you're going to pitch us a game later.
I sure will.
So, for the Mechanic of the Week, I was thinking about, I wanted to think about something that was a little more typically used in the more, we'll say, mass market games.
Okay.
And how to apply that to more non-mass market games. So, okay. The idea was timed actions. You're like, timed actions? What? Hmm. I'm talking about sand timers and stuff like that. You know, using something to time an action.
Yeah.
It could be an electronic thing, like, say, the newest version of Catchphrase, where you're passing the thing like a hot potato.
Yeah.
Or it could be, you know, like, I mean, you're talking about games like Boggle or Scrabble. Serious players in Scrabble use that. I'm sure you can think of a few games here.
Yeah, Taboo.
Yep, that's a good one.
Yeah. Yeah, you know, I something is bugging me in the back of my brain that I used to play as a little kid. I can't remember what it was. But yeah, so yeah, I know what you mean. Sand timers, yeah. The little vial, hourglass thing, you turn it over and the sand drains out. And when that drains out, it turns over.
Right.
Yeah.
So, I think Yahtzee actually used one too, maybe.
Maybe that's what I'm thinking of.
Maybe Yahtzee. Or some versions of Yahtzee.
Sure.
Because there are lots of different versions of Yahtzee. But, you know, really, I saw one of the things that made me think of this, actually, was I saw on Twitter, gosh, I don't remember who it was, somebody was like, anybody know where you can get good sand timers?
Hmm.
Like, from one of the online stores? And I thought, how interesting.
Yeah.
So, I was trying to think about how to apply that to different games, to more Euro style games or just to more strategy style games, right?
Mm-hmm.
I'm not downplaying any of the other games that we've talked about. But you know, I think that, you know, some of the games, everybody's played the game where somebody wants to sit there for too long, right?
Yeah.
And think about their move and, oh, what did I do? And
that
gets frustrating, right?
Right.
Now, the opposite of that, having that timer, like a minute timer or something,
mm-hmm.
that can also be really frustrating because you're just trying to figure out what to do.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, you're like, oh, the time's running out. So yeah, there's a couple ways to approach it, I think. You can look at it as are we going to use it as a limiting factor to say you have this long to complete your turn? Not that completing your turn takes a lot of time,
yeah.
But that you get those people that kind of sit there with
the analysis paralysis.
Yes,
yeah.
Sometimes self-imposed by people.
Yeah.
I think there are truly games where you can get that, and there are truly games where people just give that to themselves.
Yeah, well, I have trouble with people when I play D&D, you know. You're in the middle of a battle, and it's your turn to do something in this battle, and then you have your character sheet, and well, in 4th ed anyway, and you have three pages of power cards, and you're looking over everything, and you're just trying to figure out what to do, and you end up and you freeze up, and you're sitting there for 10 minutes, and everybody else is just going, come on already.
Right.
Yeah.
And people are like, what were you doing during everyone else's turn?
Yeah, yeah. That really, that's a freaking pet peeve of mine. I hate it when people can't figure out what to do on their turn in D&D.
Right.
Anyway, so in that case, I think a stand timer would be a really good thing.
Right.
You know?
And yeah. I feel your pain in the D&D thing, because I've played in some of the groups you have where we've had people with those problems.
Yeah.
We don't play with them anymore.
No, we don't.
So that's one way to use it, right?
Sure.
And I think there's some benefits to that.
Mm-hmm.
For me, in a normal group with, say, playing with you and your wife and my wife, it would be a detriment because we go fast enough.
Yeah.
And it's nice every once in a while when you say, I'm going to take a minute and a half or so to take my turn because I mm-hmm. really want to think about it. It's a clutch moment.
Yeah.
But it's not always a clutch one.
No,
so,
right.
So that's one way. I could see how it could be detrimental because, you know, sometimes when you play a game, you know, like I've talked about playing fast-paced games before,
mm-hmm.
Like that Blink game I've played before or like something like Scrabble Slam or even Bananagrams where you're just like trying to throw stuff out really fast,
yeah,
right?
Sure.
And sometimes you just don't feel like playing a game like that. You know, mm-hmm. you want the game experience without having to just slam through
yeah.
it.
I honestly don't care for games like that. Personally,
I think there's a time and place where I do enjoy them, but in general, I would rather play a let's just sit down and have a fun game and some conversation, mm-hmm. you know?
Yeah.
You can't really have conversation during Bananagrams. I mean, some trash talk, maybe.
You can say dump. Right. Dump. Split. Bananas! That's the most of the conversation you have in Bananagrams.
I'd sometimes trash talk people, too.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah. I'm just that good at the game.
Like, hey, side note. What do you use Scrabble rules for words when you're playing Bananagrams?
Because
when I play, I'm okay with proper names.
Depends on who I'm playing with, man. I got some Scrabble friends, and you try to pull that junk in there, they'll cut your hand off.
Yeah.
I'm not even kidding. Just a side note, Scrabble, yeah. right? I'm playing Words with Friends with some people.
Yeah.
One of the girls from my game group, well, the other girl that's not my wife from my game group,
mm-hmm.
she loves Words with Friends, so we play sometimes.
Okay.
But we don't play very fast. Like, we play a really slow game.
Sure.
But I play a game with her mom, too, because I know her mom pretty well.
Mm-hmm.
And we love playing Scrabble together when I see her a couple times a year. But now we have Words with Friends. And I'm pretty good at Scrabble / Words with Friends.
Mm-hmm.
The last game I played with her, I tried not to lose by 100 points. That was my goal. So that was just a side tangent. I just wanted to point that out.
That's fine.
Still having a good time, but it's like, oh my gosh, like I can't do anything.
We talked about this before. This is why I hate Scrabble, because I feel like every time I lose, I always lose, first of all, and when I do lose, it's always by some astronomical margin, and it's just not even fun.
Right.
It's not even fun.
Oh, speaking of word games, mm-hmm. I just want to give a shout out to our friend AJ from Van Ryder Games, and just say, remember letterpress, baby, you know what you did. So that's all I'm going to say. If you follow us on Twitter, you already know, but just want to mock him just a little bit.
Very good.
Anyway. So sorry, back to sand timers or timers. It doesn't have to be sand timers. Yeah.
Well, so I think about Boggle. Okay. Boggle, the reason that sand timer is in there, because everybody, all the players are trying to access the same information at the same time. And you are, you want to limit their ability to access that information, right?
Right.
Yeah, so everybody's all acting at the same time, and the challenge then becomes their skill in identifying all these different words that can be made from these letters. But if you let them go for too long, then everybody's going to find everything, and it's no fun. So by limiting that, you're forcing people into a time crunch, and you're forcing a kind of a stress moment, which gets your adrenaline going, and that's the fun part of Boggle, for example.
Right. So another game that I can think of that I've never played, I don't think you have either, is Nightmare.
We've only heard about that.
Right,
yeah.
And what we've heard about is from the guys that flipped the table.
Right.
And
from our friend Jeannie.
Yeah. Oh, right, our friend Jeannie, and her dad runs that at Gen Con, which we talked about trying to get in on that.
Right.
One of the things that I like about the timer in that game, at least from the way it's been described, is that it starts out as the fun game you're just playing.
Yeah.
But then as that timer gets closer, then it's like, dude, take your turn! Mm-hmm.
And that's a long time. That's a 1 hour
right
timer, right? It's not like a 1 minute sand timer.
Right.
It's an hour, so when you start the game, you feel like, oh man, we got an hour, we got plenty of time. And then all of a sudden, you realize at some point, holy crap, we're almost out of time.
We don't have that much time.
Yeah.
So so thinking along those lines, it might be fun to have like a sand timer that's like a 10 minute sand timer.
Mm-hmm.
And then you have different phases of the game, right? So it's a normal game. You have different phases.
Okay.
And each phase starts something new. So you flip it over and now, boom, new phase. The 10-minute timer starts again. So you don't feel so rushed because that time is on everyone, right?
Yeah.
And it's how far you proceed in the game. I mean, what may make that fun is a co-op game that does that, right? I think of a game like Forbidden Island where you're kind of fighting the clock anyways, but it's a self-imposed clock because every time you take a turn,
sure,
that makes it worse.
Mm-hmm.
And then every so many turns, you'll get a water card that forces the water level to rise in mm-hmm. that game, and then things start to happen faster. But I think about a game like that and how you could do the exact same thing with a sand timer
mm-hmm.
Or some sort of timing system that says, you know, hey, you have 15 minutes to complete this game.
Now, that's the kind of thing where at like a 10-minute sand timer, that would be an expensive accessory to put in your game.
So probably be pretty big, huh?
Right? So you would need a big sand timer. So it would be like if you're going to do that, which is a valid idea, which actually might be kind of cool. But that's the kind of thing where that sand timer would have to be that hourglass. In that point, it would be a big hourglass, right?
Right.
That would have to be like the central focus of your game, and that all of your pieces would have to be complementary to that thing. If that's going to be such a big feature, and then it becomes a selling point. You're saying, hey, this game is based around the myth of the hourglass and which could be kind of a neat theme.
That might be fun if the board was built into it, right? So go with me on this.
Okay.
So you've got a sand timer, and maybe it's got like it's like a four-way sand timer, right? So it's like shaped like a cross kind of.
Oh, that's a neat idea.
And each way that you tip it is a different board that you play on. So like section one, there's a top, right? And that's the board you're doing stuff on. And now when it shifts, ka-kunk, now there's a new board exposed and you're doing something on that board. Or maybe even running down it. Does that make sense?
Yeah, I hear you.
So
yeah.
You've got what you could have with that that's really cool is you can have, assuming I understand physics correctly, you could have four different timers. Like basically, right? Like four different
amounts
of sand.
When one runs out, you turn it, yeah.
Right, so then you turn it to section two, which maybe has a smaller sand capture in it, right?
Yeah.
So, yeah, that might be kind of fun. I mean, I like the idea of it being the central focus.
Mm-hmm.
It's kind of fun. You know, it's different than it's different than what I would have thought of. Now, it'd probably be an expensive game.
Well, yeah, it would. It would have to be, you know, a really. It's almost an art piece at that point.
Right.
You know, depending on how many you could produce.
Right.
That's a cool idea. Now, okay, so a while back we talked about electronic components, you know.
Obviously, that's a cheaper way to achieve this.
I mean, on our level, of course, it's inaccessible, but you could use a stopwatch app or something on your phone. You could, you know, say to people, hey, you need to watch the second hand on your clock or use a stopwatch timer on your phone to help you play this game.
You probably, though, could cheaply put in an electronic stopwatch.
You think so?
I bet you could get those for about a buck or two a piece if you got a small one. Seriously.
Yeah, maybe.
So, but something like that would be cool if it was like a spy game. I always come back to spy games.
Yeah.
So like you have 3 minutes to complete this mission. So you flip a card over and it says you have to get to this place. You have 3 minutes to complete this mission. And then you're like, doot, doot. And then you want
to
go.
Yeah, set it to the thing to 3 minutes and it starts counting down.
Yep.
Yeah, that's a neat idea.
So...
That could be really cool. So you have 3 minutes to solve a certain puzzle or to move your piece from point A to point B on the board or something like that.
And what would be cool about that is if you fail a section, you're not really failing the game. And the whole game doesn't have to be timed. The whole game can take as long as you want. But these side missions you do are timed.
Yeah.
You know, and you can have it to where everyone else is trying to sabotage you when you're doing that, right?
Sure.
So... Or maybe they have the same goal. Maybe it's you have 3 minutes. If someone gets to this point, they get the prize. If you know, or maybe everyone has. Maybe it's an elimination game, right? Like a Survivor style game.
Mm.
And I know we're not huge fans of player elimination, but let's say it is.
Sure.
And you're trying to all get to like a safety zone. Like you now have 5 minutes to get to the safety zone. So everybody's rolling, taking their turns, trying to get there. And if you don't get there, boom, you're out.
Mm-hmm.
And maybe when you're out, you just lose points or something. It's not like full on elimination.
It could be.
So.
Yeah, that's something that would be interesting to try and trying to incorporate into something. One thought is if you don't want to have the standard little sand timers are typically 1 minute timers, right?
I think that's the standard. Yeah.
So what you could do is you could have packed in with your game 6 of those. You know.
Okay.
And so you say this, and when you get to this task, this is a two minute task, and you pull 2 timers out of the box, and you turn one over and go. When that one runs out, you got to have the other player watching, so that as soon as that one runs out, you flip the next one over.
Which, I mean, let's face it, if they're playing against you, they're going to be paying real close attention.
Oh, yeah, of course they are, yeah.
You could technically achieve that with one, though, because the second it finishes, you flip it back.
Yeah, but yeah, well, that's true. But it might be more fun to kind of have those, you know, lined up for you, you know?
That's
so you're
true.
Like, oh, you know?
That is true.
It'd be kind of, but you're right, you could achieve that with just one. But then somebody's got to remember the count one, two, how many times I flipped that.
That's true. Yeah, that's true.
Yeah. That's kind of a neat idea.
But no, I think we've done more with this idea than I kind of thought. I mean, I just didn't necessarily expect that we would be able to kind of come up with a few ideas. Why do I doubt us?
So, we're geniuses.
Yeah, I don't know about that. But so any other thoughts on that? I still kind of like the idea of like a phase, right? Like you could do this with a stopwatch as well. Mm-hmm. The first phase of the game is 15 minutes. Mm-hmm. Ticking.
Well, the point of a sand timer is, I think, the point of a timer period in a game is to cause stress for the players,
right?
Yeah, and to force a kind of a physical reaction to a tactile to a board game to what is normally a cerebral activity. And so if your game is themed that way, I think it'd be cool. Yeah,
maybe a game about bomb technicians.
Well, you know, we've toyed with the idea of you know, defusing bombs and things before, and maybe a timer like that is a good thing to add to that.
Yeah, I don't think it's a bad idea, mm-hmm. especially if it's, you know, some games have the random timer.
Yeah.
Where, like, you move it back and forth, like the bomb games. Mm-hmm. But I like the idea of you can see the timer.
Mm-hmm.
So...
A ways back, we talked about a game of defusing a bomb, and where the players are trying to reach some kind of code, and your timer is resetting, and somebody would have to take their turn to flip the timer, to reset the timer. And I think before we were thinking about that being like a tracker on a board or something.
Oh my gosh!
What if you could do that with a sand timer?
Would
you know?
Be so much better.
I know, right? Because if somebody's trying to make a decision that time, everybody's watching that time saying hurry up, hurry up, and they want that person to take longer, so they have to be the one to flip that. But if that guy hurries up and does that, and then the next guy's going to go, oh, crap, and then he's got to flip that thing, take his entire turn to flip that. And then it goes to the next guy who can keep trying.
I like that. You know? And, I mean, theoretically, it shouldn't keep happening to the same person.
No. But because the other thing you could do is you could really milk that, where you could just sit there on your turn and go, I don't know what to do, I'm not sure, and wait for that thing to count down until it's almost done, then real quick take your turn. And then if that next guy isn't ready to go... to play his thing, to pass it to the next guy, he's got to hurry up and flip that, otherwise everybody dies.
Right, and you know, that was one of the things we talked about with the original idea for that game, is that everyone has to work together. It's right. Competitive, right?
Yeah.
If the timer goes off, everybody dies.
Yeah.
So what's cool about that is you don't want to just keep screwing the same guy, right? Because if you screw the same guy enough, he might just say screw you and let everybody die.
Yeah.
What if it was a cooperative game with that sand timer mechanic?
Mm-hmm.
So you're trying to, we're trying to work together, right? We mm-hmm. all have different roles in this, but it's going to take so long for me to do what I need to do, right? But I don't want to take so long that like you have to waste your turn, because what if you're the guy we need to make the next step in this thing?
Sure.
Now it's going to go back around as people waste their turns.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah, that could be fun.
A game like that too, you could also have, the multiple sand timer mechanic.
Yeah, sure.
Where they're all going at different mm-hmm. times, and if you have 6 of them, if 3 get emptied at any given time, the game ends.
Yeah, or you could say, you know, you're only going to be able to reset the timer, you know, 6 times or 5 times, and after that 6th one counts down, everybody's dead. So if you don't work together to solve the solution by the time that last timer runs out, you're boned.
Right. That's a 6-minute game, though, so...
That's true. It's just a 6-minute game. You're right.
you could make it a 12-minute game mm-hmm. by having a 1 and a 2 painted on each side.
Oh, sure, yeah.
So it just runs down and then runs mm-hmm. back.
Yeah.
But what I was thinking was, like, so you have six timers, right?
Yeah.
And at the start of your turn, the first time around, you have to flip a timer over, right? Mm-hmm. So, like, there's as many timers as there are players in the game, right?
Okay.
So start of my turn, I flip it. Finish my turn. Now it's your turn. You have to flip one. Now, at any point, you can skip your turn to flip a timer back, right? So that way you have three times, say there's four players, you have four timers going at different levels, right?
Oh, okay.
So at any point, someone's got to flip one because they can't all run out.
Yeah.
So
you could have six of these things going with all different levels.
Exactly.
Yeah, okay.
So,
oh, that's neat.
And
idea.
Maybe you could even have, I mean, I don't know exactly how the sand timers work and how available they are, but maybe you could have a minute one, a 2 minute one, a 30 second one, a 45 second one. You could have some different, you know.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Even if it is just a 6 minute game or a 12 minute game, it could also be structured as the kind of game that is intended to play fast and you're supposed to play multiple rounds of it too. You know, it's an option too. But
that's true too.
I like that idea of having stuff all at different levels.
Right.
That's freaky.
It's very tactile.
Yeah,
too.
Yeah, it is.
Have that.
I like that.
So,
Anyways. That's a good mechanic, sir.
So, thank you.
Yeah, that got us both excited.
It did.
Yeah.
I'm now excited about a game we talked about a long time ago.
Yeah.
A lot more excited than I was before.
Right.
So.
Cool.
Well, I think it's time for practicing the pitch.
I think you're right. It's my turn.
It is your turn.
Yeah. All right. So, this is an idea that came to me a couple weeks ago. It was inspired by some friends of mine that I had in college and post-college days. These guys were all artists and musicians and they were mostly single guys living in a really, really... Well, they started out living in a really, really terrible house outside of town, and then they moved to a really, really terrible house in town here in Kalamazoo. And their previous house we called the Art Ranch because they were artists, you know, they're musicians, and they were just doing art there all the time. But when they moved into town, they had less space, and so they tried to call it the Art Ranch, but they didn't really get a whole lot of art done there because they didn't have the room. And they were all single guys in their mid-20s without girlfriends to clean up after them. So we affectionately started calling their house the Filth Ranch because it was always filthy.
I just want to interject for a second. I believe I know who one of these people are.
You certainly do.
Okay, that's all. Thank you.
We'll keep his name quiet.
I was just trying not to laugh over here because I was thinking about that.
Right. Yeah, so the Filth Ranch. Which, if you ask me, I don't ever want my home to be called the Filth Ranch, you know?
This is awkward. That's what I'm talking about. I'm kidding.
Yeah. But, you know, you went in there, and it was not at all uncommon to see, an ashtray full of cigarette butts, and then a dinner plate next to that ashtray also full of cigarette butts, and then a shoebox on the floor also full of cigarette butts, because they dumped the ashtray and the plate before into that shoebox and then filled both of those others up again. You know, just the most horrible, disgusting...
This is terrifying to me.
Pure filth. Pure filth. It kind of got to the point where I wouldn't even go into that house.
I wouldn't have either.
I would wait on the front porch when other people were... when they were having a party or something. I would just hang out on the front porch. No, dude, I'm hanging out on the porch. I'm good out here. I'm drinking my 40, man.
Was this in the student ghetto?
Yeah.
Of course it was.
For the listeners, the student ghetto, most college towns have a student ghetto. Kalamazoo has one too. So it's a bunch of old homes that are poorly insulated and have college kids in and out of them all winter long, basically.
Right. And it's not the safest place in the world, but it's certainly not the actual, like, bad part of town.
Right.
It's just, you know, the part of town where you're going to run into some hipsters.
Right. Well, in that day, it was frat boys and chachas and
now
all that
it's
stuff.
Now it's hipsters.
Now it's hipsters, right.
I know people that live in that neighborhood still.
Yeah.
They're hipsters.
This is probably 8 or 9 years ago. So.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Hipsters before hipsters were cool.
Before the hipster wave hit.
Yeah.
The wave of hipsters hit America. Yeah.
Anyway. So
that's kind of a hipster thing to say, though. Oh, this is before the hipsters were cool.
Yeah.
Anyway, so, yeah. And I can't remember where this... Oh, I remember where this idea came from. That Slenderman game that I pitched a couple episodes ago, I discovered with some research that actually Slenderman is a copyrighted character. So if I was going to make a game about that character, I would need permission from the copyright holder, and that's... I don't want to get involved in that, you know?
Right.
That's not the kind of thing that we would do.
Rob will be making the new game, Benderman.
Yeah, if anybody's interested in that, actually, when we posted the synopsis of the game on the website. I put a little note in there with a link to an article about that very subject, so I would encourage you to go read that. It's an interesting article, an interesting idea of what people think was a character created on the internet just kind of by the community. In reality, somebody came up with that,
right,
and that
right.
guy owns that.
It's interesting to read it. Never mind. I'll cover that later.
Okay.
Move on.
At any rate, so I've said before how much I love this changeover mechanic idea. And so I was kind of so bummed. I mean, I thought Slender Man, I thought that was a real thing that I could go with. But maybe I can come up with something else for this changeover. And so this Filth Ranch game was born. So the idea here is that you are a college student living with your buddies in an apartment, okay? And lots of colleges have either on-campus housing or off-campus housing. It's like kind of a group apartment where you have a community or communal living room, kitchen, bathroom thing, and then everybody has their own side apartment, right?
Right.
So you might have two or three or four bedrooms attached to this one main area. So it's all part of one apartment. So the idea here is that you and your roommates are living in this apartment in a complex. And you're all filthy college students, and you have affectionately nicknamed your apartment the Filth Ranch because of all the garbage that is piled up everywhere. And then one day your landlord calls, and he said he's got to come in and do an inspection because he's got to do this every 6 months because it's student housing. And
Ruh-roh.
Yeah, you realize that if the landlord gets there and sees the place like this, you're all going to get evicted, and you can't do that. Now, my original thought was that you get a phone call and your girlfriend's coming with her mom, and you got to clean up the place before your girlfriend gets there with your mom. But I don't want to exclude female gamers, so I want to kind of broaden this out. You know what I mean?
That's a good idea.
Yeah,
that's a good idea.
Right. So the first part of the game is you basically is you and the other players basically filling up this apartment with trash, with filth. Okay, and you have the board is like a top down view of the apartment, right? And you have the main entrance, you have your living room, you have your kitchen, and you have the four apartments. So it's a maximum of a four player game. You can play as two, three, four player, and they're set up like a grid. Like
four separate apartments?
Excuse me, four separate bedrooms. I keep saying okay. Apartments. I mean bedrooms. Thank you.
You explained it before to me. You said bedrooms. That's what I was clarifying.
That's what I meant. I'm sorry. I think I keep on saying that. I shouldn't. Anyway, so four separate bedrooms. You have a central living room. You have a kitchen. You have a bathroom. And they're all set up with like a one-inch square grids, okay? And then you have a deck of cards, and then everybody is drawing cards. In the first part of the game, you are playing cards which allow you to place filth tiles on the board.
Okay.
Okay. And that card will tell you what kind of filth you can play and where you can play it.
Cool.
Okay.
Cool.
You can play it in the living room, in the kitchen, in the bathroom, or in one of the bedrooms.
Okay.
All right. And what I'm thinking actually is that it would be you'd have to play two cards at a time. So you would play a room card and a filth card. And so by doing that combination together, that's where you would be able to place that thing. So I guess then you'd actually have two decks. You'd have a room deck and you'd have a filth deck.
Okay, that makes sense.
Right, so then you play those cards down, and then you then take a tile from the box, and the tiles correspond with the different kinds of filth, okay? And then you would lay that tile down in the on a square, okay? And then if you get to a point where all the squares in a room are taken, well, that room is full of filth, you can start stacking tiles.
Nice.
You start stacking tiles.
Realistic, though.
So. Realistic, yeah. Now, I mean, you can't actually... You can't stack before the room is full, but after the grid is full of tiles, then you can start stacking on top of that.
Okay.
So, but at some point, the landlord card or the phone call card is going to come up. Okay, so you're going to get that phone call from the landlord, all right? And you're going to go, the landlord, he called, he's coming, and then the game switches, and now you're playing those cards not to place filth, but to clean up filth. Okay, and you have conflicting goals here. Everybody has to clean up the living room because if there's too much filth left in the living room when the landlord gets there, then you're all evicted.
Nice. Okay.
But you also need to work on cleaning up your own bedrooms. So in the first part of the game, of course, you're trying to place filth in your opponent's bedrooms and keep yours empty, and they're trying to do the same to you. So when the game switches, you're trying to clean up filth. You're also trying to clean the filth out of your bedroom.
Right.
Okay. Because let's say the living room, the main living area in the kitchen and bathroom, those are community areas. If those are completely clean, but your bedroom is still full of filth, you're still getting kicked out.
You or everyone?
Well, you specifically.
Okay.
Right.
So the living room and bathroom or kitchen, I assume, mm-hmm. everyone's gone.
Everyone's gone.
But specific bedroom, that person's out.
That person's out individually, cool. Right.
That makes sense.
Right. And so then you're playing these cards, and then at some point then the landlord card, you know, the knock on the door card comes, and the landlord shows up. And then then you do your final scoring. And, it'd be a certain threshold of how many filth tiles are left in a specific room. You know, if there's over a certain amount or under a certain amount, you're good, you're out. And then the winner, whoever has the least amount of filth left in their bedroom is the winner, the overall winner.
Okay.
But there's the opportunity that everybody will lose. Now, one thing to add to that is that the game also comes with a six-sided die. Okay. And when the phone call comes from the landlord, you roll the die, and that's the mood die. Okay.
Okay.
All right. And the landlord has three different moods. So each mood has two faces on the die.
Cool.
You have a good mood, a neutral mood, and a bad mood. And that will tell you how much filth can be left in what your threshold is for the amount of filth that's available. So what you can do here is you roll that mood die when the phone call comes, because you can kind of tell from the landlord's voice on the phone what kind of mood he's in. And
right.
You'll figure out how good a job am I going to have to do to win. Okay. So that's the idea. So the landlord gets there. You count up your tiles and you see if you all win or lose, or if that's it basically. So that's the Filth Ranch.
I like it. I think that I like stacking. I like the idea of stacking mm-hmm. the filth. And so now the cards would say kitchen, bathroom, living room, or bedroom, I assume.
Yeah.
Now, would some of them say your bedroom or opponent's bedroom?
Well, that's a good question. Maybe they should, yeah. Maybe they should.
Now, to play those cards to remove things, to play those cards to remove things, you're going to want it to just be general, right? Because you don't want it to be your bedroom, their bedroom, right? I mean, because I've just got a bunch of their bedroom cards. I don't want to play that to help my opponents.
Yeah, you're right, because you don't want to clean up other people's rooms afterwards. So I think it would have to just be bedroom, period.
Right.
Yeah. Oh, you know what? I'm remembering now a detail. Okay, so you have the mood die for
right.
when the landlord calls. Okay, all right, this is the piece I forgot, and I knew I was forgetting something. When the landlord shows up, the game ends, and then you also have a D10, okay? And you roll the D10, okay? And then the D10 tells you what your fill threshold is, how many tiles can be left. All right, and then the mood die gives you a modifier to that.
Okay.
Yeah. So the mood die, if he's in a good mood, it can give you a plus two to your roll of the D10. So your max 10 plus two could be 12. Right.
Okay. Yep.
But if he's in a bad mood, it's a minus two.
Okay.
Right.
So if you roll a 10 minus two, not a big deal. You roll a 2 minus two, and you're, or less than two, and you're looking at zero. Whoa.
Yeah. So it's got to be completely clean. So that's the idea. And of course, neutral mood is a zero modifier. And I guess it's a six-sided die, so you could even take it farther and have various levels of mood, plus one, plus two, plus three, or minus one, minus two, minus three for that modifier, if we wanted to do it that way. You know, it's an option.
That's a good point. Yeah, I mean,
yeah.
I would worry about doing too high and too low of modifiers.
Yeah.
Only because on that D10, that can really screw you. You know what, in my opinion, might be better than a D10? 2D6. Or 2d4. The reason I say that, 2d6 is probably your cheapest option,
mm-hmm.
is because then the lowest roll you can possibly get is a 2. Right?
Yeah.
So minus makes 0,
mm-hmm.
but there's a less chance of the only thing you could get to hit a 0 is snake eyes.
That's a good point.
So
you could also be a custom d10 that only goes from like 5 to 10, you know, has 5 to 10, each number on there twice. That'd be another way to handle it.
That's a good point as well. That might get a little pricier.
Yeah, it would be.
2d6 is
2d6
a very
is cheaper.
Cheap way to
You're
do
right.
it.
That's probably a better way to go.
So, and just a thought.
And that also gets you your max of 12 plus 2, max of 14. So that gives you more flexibility with the amount of filth
right,
left.
Right, right.
Okay.
Because I like the idea of the mood modifier, and I like the idea of rolling
mm-hmm.
so that you're surprised. You
yeah.
know what I mean?
Yeah. So you're not quite sure if you're going to make it or not. Yeah.
So.
And then in determining your... whether you're evicted or not, the mm-hmm. idea here is that I think you would take the total number of tiles left in your bedroom and add that to the total number of tiles left in the living room.
Okay.
Okay.
So now, just another question, with the cards you've got that allow you to play stuff, some of those I assume would be better than others. Some might say play or remove two filth tiles. Some would say
yeah.
mm-hmm. play or remove one, maybe one would be three. Mm-hmm. The reason I'm saying that is because then you have to decide for yourself.
Am I going to use these now or save them for later?
Right.
Yeah.
Because if you've got a bunch that allow you to put a lot down, you could really hose your opponent.
Yeah.
Or you could really save yourself.
Right.
You know, and if you made some of those be like, remove four from the living room, right? Mm-hmm. So then you're like, do I want to play that? Because I want my opponent to feel like he has to play
that.
Yeah. You know?
The other thing is that I'm thinking there'd be like three or four different types of filth, you know?
There'd be good point.
Paper products. There'd be food. There would be, I don't know, cigarette butts, you know?
Right. I mean, there could be like food, something else and something else. Yeah. I mean, food is definitely a good.
An easy one. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. It just, maybe just dirt.
Yeah.
You know?
General filth.
Right. Yeah, personal hygiene products.
To me, if you were gonna pitch this to a game company,
yeah,
my recommendation would be gut busting games for the people who do Redneck Life.
Oh yeah,
it actually sounds like something that's kind of up their alley.
Yeah,
if you could work in Pink Flamingos or someone named Daryl, I think you would be square.
Your landlord's name is Daryl.
Actually, yeah. If this was going to be a game for them, I would actually think that you would be cleaning up your yard too. It would be the county is coming.
Right.
And you'd be cleaning up cars and stuff out of your yard.
That's true, yeah.
Use TVs.
Yeah, one of the legends of the Phil Ranch. Actually, this is back to the Art Ranch days. Is that the house they were renting had, there was a barn behind it, and there was a horse in the barn, an old horse named Juniper. And Juniper was a sweet old horse, an old swayback horse with no teeth, so she couldn't eat apples, but she loved applesauce.
So they fed her applesauce?
Yeah, and they go out there with a bowl of applesauce. And, yeah.
She was their horse?
She was not their horse. She was the landlady's horse.
Okay, yeah. I see.
Juniper was this very sweet old horse. So I thought that, you know, a potential bonus would be the Juniper card. So it's just basically, it's an expansion, and it's a card and a tile. And the tile is a 2x2 tile. So instead of being a 1-inch square tile, it's a 2-inch square tile. And it takes four spaces.
Okay.
Okay, and then in order to clean it up, I guess it'd be two Juniper cards, one before and one after the landlord calls, right? So one of them, you're going to be able to place Juniper somewhere, but then to get Juniper out requires everybody's help.
So you can bring a horse into the apartment?
Yeah. How to get there? I don't want to know. We got to get it out before landlord gets here, though. So
it's very hangover-esque.
Right. So
Tiger!
What it means is it's going to require all the players to work to band together to devote one entire turn to getting rid of Juniper. But if you're a jerk and you get to play, you can play Juniper in somebody else's bedroom, you're totally hosed. Nobody's going to help you get Juniper out.
Right. So there would have to be some way for you to get them out on your own.
Yeah. Right.
Really,
it's just an idea that's bouncing around there. It'd be funny. So, yeah. The Filth Ranch. I think it's a funny idea. It's silly. Of course, it would have to be kind of cartoony and lighthearted. And,
oh, yeah. I mean, you're not going to make a serious game of this, right?
Yeah, yeah.
And I don't mean that in a bad way. I just mean it'd be a fun game. It's
jokey
a funny
and silly,
game,
right?
I mean, that's hence my comment about pitching it to gut-busting games.
Yeah, yeah, so, for sure.
Just because, you know, I mean, and games like that are valid. Especially a game like this because there's a lot of strategy involved.
Yeah,
it's not just roll and move or something like that.
Right.
But it certainly is funny.
Yeah.
Yeah. No. I think there's a lot you could do with it. I think you could easily add in variance.
I think so.
For the game.
Yeah. For sure.
Especially if it was like a Kickstarter thing. I mean, you could definitely do some variants, like the Juniper thing, or plenty of other things. You know, to really try to make the game have some differences for for replayability,
some variety, some other options, and I think it'd be a lot of fun. So, definitely want to try and explore that a little bit more in the future.
Excellent.
So I think that's good enough for me here. Do you have some comments from the website, I think?
Why, yes, sir, I do.
All right.
So I do have one thing that I got on the website. It's a comment from Robert, who I believe is Senior Bob, which is Senior B-A-U-B on Twitter. Senior Bob.
Yep.
He's asked us some questions before, and he had some good comments about the teamwork and slenderness thing you were talking about earlier.
Mm-hmm.
This is what I was referring to that I was going to bring up. So first he said a game that he thinks has really good teamwork is Letters from Whitechapel.
I've never heard of that.
Which is a game about Jack the Ripper. One player plays Jack, who moves secretly through London and commits murders, while the other players are the investigators who are on a team trying to get Jack.
Okay.
So that sounds like an interesting game. Jack the Ripper's kind of cool, you know, like, he's not cool, but the theme is kind of a neat theme,
I think. I've heard of the game Mr. Jack before that I think is kind of a similar idea, but I'm sorry, okay. I didn't mean to interrupt.
Cool. Yeah. And then the other thing is a comment for you. He says, the story of the Slender Man reminds me of another figure that I've heard of called the Grinning Man.
Oh, we've talked about the Grinning Man, not on the show before. But yeah.
Right, we've talked about the Grinning Man before. So, you used to be able to look up the Grinning Man on Wikipedia, but they removed the page.
Did they?
It's kind of weird, because, I mean, Wikipedia has so many friggin' pages. But,
right.
So basically, the Grinning Man is this cryptid, or whatever, this unproven thing.
Right.
That's this dude that people see who's kind of weird looking. He's got black eyes. He's wearing a sparkly suit, and he's smiling at you with a huge grin.
Isn't he supposed to have green skin?
I think maybe he has green skin.
Yeah.
So the most, I believe, from what I've read on Wikipedia, it's been a while, but the most talked about Grinning Man, of course, is Indrid Cold. Indrid Cold, also known as the Mothman from Point Pleasant. Supposedly.
I've heard of that, too. There's a movie about that, isn't there?
The Mothman Prophecies, yeah. And he uses the name Indrid Cold in that when he calls him on the phone and says, "Chapstick!" So, have you seen the movie?
No, I haven't.
No, it's weird.
Did you spoil it for me?
No, I mean...
Okay.
Richard Gere is holding something in his hand, and he says, "What's in my hand?" And over the phone, the voice says, "Chapstick!" And that's what's in his hand. So, it's creepy.
I hate Richard Gere.
Yeah.
I'll probably never watch that.
So, anyways, not that great of a movie.
Okay.
So that's The Grinning Man.
Grinning Man, yeah.
Which, by the way, I think is actually open license. So, so is The Mothman. So there's a couple other things you could possibly throw at the Slendy idea.
Okay.
So.
Right on.
Just to change it up, if you were interested in pursuing it.
Yeah, I mean, I could also just make up my own villain or something, you know, my own crazy monster character.
Using something that's kind of in the mythos out there.
It's nice to be able to do that, yeah.
Right, you know. Because that gives people a sense of, like, remembrance, right? They hear them, they say, hey, that's
familiar. Yeah, 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 familiarity, right.
Yeah, you know, so that's not a bad thing.
Yeah. Cool.
All right. So that's actually all I had for that.
Okay.
So I guess we're going to move on to plugs.
Yeah, and I think we just wanted to plug one thing tonight, right?
Which is the Unpub 3 event. We've talked about the Unpub Network before, and we're friends with them.
Yeah.
And we love the Unpub Network.
They do wonderful things for people.
And they've done good things for us. So
yeah.
we really thank them for that. But what we want to do is we want to talk about their Unpub 3 event, which is an event they have where they get together with a bunch of unpublished people. And the next one is being held on January 19th, 2013, from 10 a.m. to 11 p.m. on Saturday, and then also on Sunday again, the 20th, from 10 a.m. to 6 p.m. And that's going to be held at St. Thomas More Academy in Magnolia, Delaware. So if you're around that area, I highly suggest you check it out. We, unfortunately, are not that close, but really, really, you should check it out. You can go to their website, which is easy to find. It's unpub.net, and you can register there. I certainly suggest you do that. If you can't make it to the event, go to their website. Look through this stuff anyways. It's such a great thing.
It's a fantastic resource for people like us.
Yes.
And if you're interested in game design and you are trying to pursue that, check out Unpub. Absolutely.
Yes, definitely. It's great people run it.
Yeah.
Some published designers work very closely with it. You know, I mean, these guys know what they're doing and they want to help you. So.
Yep, they sure do.
Yes. So that's kind of our co-pitch tonight for that.
Mm-hmm.
Definitely check it out. And I'm sure we'll be talking about that more in the coming weeks just because it's such a good thing. And I want as many designers as possible, you know, and not even just designers, people just interested in trying new games.
Yeah, 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 of course.
You know, these are the people you should be talking to.
Yeah, if you're just interested in trying some unpublished games, you know, trying some new ideas, because a lot of these things are just that, they're brand new ideas you've probably never seen before.
And so, you can really find some gems by
absolutely.
Doing this, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
The indie games can be so much more diverse than the mass market stuff.
Right.
Because they don't have to sell to 10,000 people to make money.
Right.
You know, they can sell to 1,000 and do a small run. And
take weird chances and do unique stuff.
Exactly.
Yeah.
So, we support that.
Cool.
So that's our pitch.
That's it. All right. Thanks a lot for your time tonight, Jason. I think we had a good show.
I think so, too.
What did we learn today?
We learned that just because something is a mass market idea that we know of, used mostly in mass market, big budget, Ameritrash games and trivia and word games.
Right.
You could still possibly apply it and make an awesome game.
Maybe.
Hey, and if anybody out there has heard of any other games where they're using timers and stuff that they think is an awesome game, other than the stuff we've heard of, by all means, I'd love to hear about it. Mm-hmm. So
tell us about something cool that's using that in a different way.
That'd be great.
So thank you, everybody, for listening once again to Building the Game Podcast. Check out our website, which is buildingthegamepodcast.com. You can send us an email to buildingthegamepodcast@gmail.com. You can follow us on Twitter @podcastbtg. You can follow Jason @JASlingerland. I am @poorly_designed. You can like us on Facebook. Once again, remember, if we get 100 likes on Facebook, Jason will give us some super special bonus prize to everybody out there in the whole wide world. You can give us a 5-star review on iTunes, and you can just dream about us at night if you'd like.
That's what I do.
Our wonderful smooth voices. That wasn't a very smooth way to say that, though.
That was terrible.
It was terrible. Good night, everybody.
Good night.
Building the Game is a co-production of Imminent Entertainment and Poorly Designed Studios.
All the ideas presented by Rob and Jason are the property of the Building the Game podcast.
Next time on Building the Game.